Welcome to the Inbox Podcast with Vincent Sugira.
All right, yo, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back again to the Inbox Podcast with me, Vincent Sugira. Today, I invited yet another poet. So, Vivian, welcome, welcome, welcome to the Inbox Podcast for your first time here in the studio.
Thank you.
Tell me why we've been having this studio for a while and you haven't recorded nothing from here. Explain.
Like, really? Right now?
Yes, so let's go.
Because I haven't been intentionally creating, that's why.
Oh.
I haven't created in a while. Like, I've been focusing on school and trying to make some money.
Is the money coming now?
It's trickling. It's a trickle.
Uh-huh,
but
uh-huh.
We need it to be like...
Yeah.
We need it to rush.
All right, yeah. So Vivian is my friend. The first time we met was at the Poetherapy event, which
yes.
You performed very well. Everyone was talking about you. And then we'll get to hear it. We'll get to hear about it in this podcast. We might do some freestyling. So Vivian, welcome.
Thank you.
To the Inbox. If you have your way of introducing yourself as an artist, let's go.
I wish I did, but...
Of course,
generally, I don't.
Okay, let's go.
But I do introduce myself as made in Nigeria, and then I've been like sent to the rest of the world. Like, I've made, assembled in Nigeria, and then distributed to the rest of the world. So that's it. But I don't know if that's artistic.
How did that come about, though?
Yeah, I've always seen myself as a global citizen, but like one who is global but acts locally.
Yeah, sure.
So I mean, Naija Babe, like wherever I go to, like that's the first thing I identify myself is Naija Babe. And then you have to know that I'm from Nigeria.
Naija Babes.
You have to know that.
Uh-huh.
And then you know that, okay, yes, even though I'm from Nigeria, I'm very open-minded. I like to open myself up to other people's experiences and I want to learn about different cultures. I want to see how life is done outside of Nigeria, and I know that I always have something to contribute in every room that I find myself. So that's the from Nigeria to the world kind of thing.
Nigeria to the world.
Yeah,
anyways, I think from a few conversations I know you've traveled in some places.
A bit.
Tell us about it.
Oh boy.
Was it because of poetry you traveled? Was it other businesses?
So it started with public speaking, because I used to be like a professional public speaker. It's like my first university. I used to be part of the debate team, so that's where my travel started. So I traveled into like other African countries to debate and do public speaking. And then in 2016, that was when I found that I could write poetry. I didn't even know. And then from 2017, I started traveling as a poet. Yeah.
2017 as a poet.
Yes.
I'm interested on the poetry part. Public speaking. Yes, we know you got that.
Yeah.
Because that was quite a performance you gave at the event. So that one, we're not going to stick there. So as a poet, I think the fact that art guides you to travel the world, I don't know how many places you've been to, but you say this because of poetry, yeah?
Yeah.
And what do you tell people who think art cannot, you know, get you to travel the world? By art, I mean music can get you to travel the world.
Yeah.
I'm talking about these almost ignored type of arts, like poetry, like those sorts of arts. So tell them.
Well, it's very possible to travel the world through poetry. It's also very possible to make it big as a poet. And it's all up to you. It's about what you want. It's about your belief system. It's about your work ethics. So I always believe that there's nothing that's impossible for a person that believes. So you see how like some of these Americans, or you watch these movies where someone from, let's say from a little age, maybe a very tiny age, they believe so much in something and they dedicate themselves to becoming that thing. Even though everybody else around them is saying no, everybody else is saying it's not possible. But I think it depends on your personal point of view. So for me, my personal point of view is that it's possible to make it big as a poet, and I've been able to do that. Well, even though I haven't gotten to where I want to be, I have experienced a relative success, I would say.
Most of the poets start their poetry journey because they have these traumatic experiences all the time. They felt like they have been in a point at the point where no one could understand them except residing into writing and everything. So how did your poetic, your artistic journey start? What's the story behind?
So I would say, you know, when people say art found me, I didn't find art, you think it's cliche, but it's not cliche, it's very true. For me, I never guessed I would be a poet ever in my life. I never even thought I would be in the arts. I was in the science class. My first degree is in physics. Yeah, I know I didn't tell people that a lot. I have a degree in physics. I spent 5 whole years in school studying physics. So my path was already crafted. My parents, you know, had, if you're from an African home, you know how it is. Like, you have to study something that's significant so that when they say, my child is a geophysicist or it sounds really good.
Yeah, make the parents proud.
But it's not even just the parents. Even I thought I loved geology, I loved physics, and I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
But somewhere along the line, got into the, we were just talking about YALI before this.
Yeah.
I got into YALI, the YALI West Africa.
Which year was that?
The regional fellowship in 2016.
Okay.
Before then, I used to have a book where I just write about my feelings, because I've always, people still don't know that I'm introverted, but the closest people to me know that I'm introverted. But because I'm in a stage, on the stage a lot, people think I'm an extrovert. Most times the way I processed my feeling is to write it down. So all these times I've been writing down my feelings, I had no idea what I used to write sometimes was poetry. And so during that fellowship, it so happened that Nigeria's independence came during while we were in the fellowship. It was a 2 months, almost 2 months fellowship. We're all like from young people from different parts of Africa, over 130 people from different parts of Africa, with together in a leadership space. And I wanted, because I love my country so much, I'm one of those people that love Nigeria so much that you'd be like, what is wrong with this girl? So I wanted to write something for Nigeria. So I wrote something for Nigeria. And because I was introverted, I was very observant. So I wrote that thing. It was about Nigeria, but I infused something about everything I observed during that fellowship, about every young person that was in that room from different countries. And everybody started calling me a poet. Like when I did the performance, which I didn't even call it poetry. I was like, okay, this is something I wrote for my country. I even read it out. I didn't even perform. I wrote it, I read it out, and everybody was screaming. It was a standing ovation. I was like, after that incident, everybody started calling me a poet.
Do you still remember the poem you recited?
I don't. I've been looking for... It wasn't a poem. It was a write-up. For real. I've been looking for it. Like, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But I should have the... I should be able to look for the video.
Yeah.
The video is an archive, like the YALI. So what I need to do is to go back and ask someone to help me with the video.
Yeah, sure. So the journey starts.
That was where the journey started.
Yeah, everyone gives you your first standing ovation. I don't know if it's your first, or maybe you had got some others from your public speaking competition.
Yeah, no, for public speaking, yeah. So maybe I was just a good public speaker, and then people just thought that was poetry.
Yeah.
So, and then once people started calling me a poet, I became curious. I'm like, okay, what is poetry? How is what I did poetry? And so I started doing research and started, and then that's when I discovered some poets like Genetics, Preston Perry, Jackie Hill Perry, those guys, Ezekiel. Those are the people that I got introduced to poetry through their art, Propaganda, all those guys. Yeah. So when I said, like, oh, I'm curious about this thing, everybody's calling me a poet, I don't even know what that is. So I went
Now, since you referred yourself to those legendary poets, what's your most legendary poem that you feel like, I mean, if you remember, because if you also asked me, you came to me, you'd be like, yo, Vincent, I know you're a poet, I want you to give me your legendary poem that you read.
Sure. I think that has changed over the years.
Yeah, sure.
What I used to like when I started, and not so much of now, like my taste, or would I say, have evolved.
Wow,
my palette. My palette has changed over time. I love more subtle stuff. Now my favorite poet right now is Titi Lope. Tidilokpe Sonuga. Oh my God, she's amazing. Mm-hmm. I call her the goddess of poetry.
The goddess of poetry.
She's amazing.
Do you remember some of her?
I know her whole, her entire discography.
Yeah.
One of my favorite poems from her is Creation Story.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it about?
Yo, it's about love. I mean, ooh. I love
love. Well, by the way, now that we talked about...
That's about love.
Yeah, the theme of that poem. Now,
yeah.
You said your type of writing, your type of poetry has changed over time.
Yeah.
The way you started is not how your art is right now.
Yeah.
Now, what is your main focus? What kind of themes do you like to cover in your poetry?
Okay.
If I give an example, I remember at the event, I think you did a poem about women and everything.
Yeah.
And everyone was going crazy. Now, so what is your type of themes that you like to cover?
So I still write about a lot of things because I get invited to events and then those events have different themes. Yeah. However, from a personal point of view, I write about the human experience. Uh-huh. The human experience, like mental health, I write about love, I write about loss, I write about struggles.
Mm-hmm.
But then that's from the human experience part. Now, I write about the African experience because I'm proudly African. Like, I can't stress that enough. Like, you know, I'm proudly African. Wherever I find myself, I identify myself as Nigerian African. So I write a lot about African experience.
Mm-hmm.
So even for TEDx AOU Rwanda, I will be doing something about Africa.
Oh.
Even last year.
You performing?
Yeah, I'm performing. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that out loud here, but yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Last year, I did something about Africa.
Uh-huh.
This year, I'm going to still do something about Africa because for me, like, the African experience is very important. We need to talk about these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that passion for Africa and the African identity, the African story, telling the African story from, like, a creative perspective and from even a balanced perspective. So those are my two main areas of focus now.
What part of African story that appealed to you the most?
Okay, so let me give context. You know, when people tell the African story, they start by talking about the colonial masters. They talk about everything that's not working in Africa. In fact, most of the story that's there about Africa, the narrative that's there about Africa, the history that's there about Africa, is not written by Africans.
Yeah,
and the things
not.
That are written by Africans are not even being taught in our schools.
Yeah, sure.
You grew up hearing about African history from books written by Europeans, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't know the true story about Africa. And then when you begin to do research about Africa, you find out that there aren't a lot of resources out there available to you to find out about what really, you know, happened.
Yeah, sure.
And so you hear these stories, you hear people, you go online and see someone thinking Africa is a country. You go, in fact, this was not even, you travel outside of Africa.
Yeah.
And people are asking you questions that you believe are stupid questions because the internet is there. We learn about them. We intentionally learn about them.
Yeah, sure.
But they don't want to learn about us.
Yeah.
So for me, that's where the whole, what I say, defiance came for. Okay, we need to educate the rest of the world about Africa. So what part of the African story for me, I believe the African identity. Like, we wearing our Africanness with pride. Even some Africans, the way they carry themselves when they go outside, they feel like everything else that comes from the West, in quotes, that's the Europe and America,
they think
it's better.
Yeah.
Or they think Americans are better than them. When they find themselves in the midst of Americans or other people, they shrink themselves.
Mm-hmm,
they're afraid to speak up.
Yeah.
So for me, that is the part where in which I approached African story.
Yeah.
That part, the African identity and the perception.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading an article, I think almost a week now, and it says it cost Africa £3.4 billion in 2024 alone in negative stereotypes. £3.4 billion. That is how much it cost Africa in just 2024 alone in negative stereotypes. The stereotypes, the stories that have been told about us.
Because
these people are always thinking, oh, Africa is corrupt. Africa is filled with war. Africa is filled. And they don't even take the time to actually travel to Africa and see that all of these stories are not balanced stories.
Yeah, sure.
So because of that, there's that fear of investment. There's that fear of interacting with Africa. So just a few. So you see, we travel to the rest of the world more than the rest of the world come
travels,
to us.
When
they come to us, they come to take.
Yeah, sure.
Because we ourselves don't know the value.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So for me, like, that's the area I've been exploring lately. Mm-hmm. Like, that, my personal struggles, my personal experiences, and then my experiences as an African.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now, that was quite deep. Now, I want to ask you, if you remember one of the poems or one of the lines that you wrote in your poetry that you'd like to share that talks about the identity, the perception, the African perception on the outside world, or the identity or how Africans treat themselves when they're in the external part of the world.
Yeah.
You know, do you have anything you've written about it that you'd share?
I would have to go through my... Is it okay for me to look?
You have all the time. You have all the time.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Is it okay for me? Okay. Let me just dig it up. Just give me a few seconds.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I don't know.
Vivian is... I don't know. I think even those are the poems, Africa related and female related type of themes. Those are the ones you covered at the event.
Yeah.
So now let's go.
So you actually want me to do the poem?
Yeah.
It's a whole how many
come
minutes
on,
poem.
Man. Like, come on, man.
Okay,
come
I'm not going to do everything.
Yeah, sure.
Because it's like almost 5 minutes long or 4 minutes. And that's a long time.
No, come on. Just do like two or three stanzas and we're good.
Okay. This one starts this way. It says, our fathers told us stories of men who fought for the collective futures of our continent so that we too can sing one day when the glory comes. Today we stand with our shoulders high, our heads held up, our voices in defiance, the courage to dream and the boldness to declare that the glory is here. It's in the way the sun welcomes us in the morning, carrying in its wake hues of new beginnings. It's in the sacrifices of the ones who lived before us. Mandela, Nkrumah, Azikiwe, Lumumba, Kenyatta, Selassie. It's in the creativity and tenacity of our youth. It's in the richness and diversity of our cultures. The laughter in our eyes when we connect over jollof wars on the streets of IG. How the East holds out its own with majesty. How the West dances its way through obstacles. Happy feet, bugaying through life. How the South models democracy with a touch of Kwaito. And the graceful flow of the Nile, distributing hope as it swaggers across the North. It's in our colors, our savannas, the vast Serengetis, our people, our music, our food. The taste of Banku on the tongue of a native Ashanti. The sway of epic waistlines to the rhythm of epic ballads. Language, rhythm, pause. Feel the pulse of our heartbeats. Follow our rhythm on a halfbeat. From Lagos to Timbuktu, Kigali to Djibouti, Nairobi to Kinshasa, Madagascar, Casablanca, Mogadishu, the glory is here. I'm going to stop there because the poem is quite long. The poem is quite long. But yeah. Like, that's the idea.
I like the part. I like the fact that you covered from the politics to the geographical side, to the food, to the cultures. That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. Now, when we talk about, yes, these are African stories, these are stories probably you read in your history books or maybe your family members discussed with you. Now, do you have your own personal African story where your identity as an African has been challenged or
I think sometimes people kind of like, would I say underestimate me a lot, because most times I'm kind of like calm, so people, they think they can just walk over me or like kind of like intimidate me. So when I traveled to the US last year, I was profiled. Yeah. So, you know, when they talk about profiling, I'm going to give part of the story. On my way back to Kigali, me and my friends that were coming, they left me in the US because they wouldn't allow me come back to... It's a long story.
Okay.
It's a long story. Mm-hmm. This woman wouldn't even... So, my passport, when I was traveling, my passport was going to expire in 6 months.
Okay.
So, I mean, you guys gave me the visa, for crying out loud.
We guys as...
No, I'm talking about these guys, the Americans. Y'all gave me visa to come to America. Yeah, because, sure. I mean, I'm valuable. I mean...
Yeah.
you guys gave me the visa. Now you don't want to let me go back because you think maybe I'm fraudulent or you think I'm a scam or something. I don't know. So you see what I was talking about, perception.
Ooh.
So when I was coming back, I have a random permit. Mm-hmm. Now, at the time I was going, my passport was 6 months.
Yeah.
But when I was coming back, because I stayed in the US for like, I think it's 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
My passport was now like 5 months to expiry date. However, I have a valid random permit.
Uh-huh.
So I should be able to, if you guys allowed me to travel, then I should be able to come back to where I reside in. I get to the airport, American Airlines, that's the airlines I was using.
Mm-hmm.
For some weird reason, they said, you can't leave. I'm like, okay, why can't I leave? It's like, your passport is no longer up to 6 months. Yeah, but I have a valid random permit.
Yeah.
They said, I can't leave. And then, every time I try to speak up, Duma said, I don't want to hear anything. And then she walks away.
Yeah.
And I'm left stranded in the airport. Because now my friends that I was with, they all passed. And most of them
were
East Africans. So they didn't have an issue.
Alone.
So you see, even as far as the African experience, even being a Nigerian, there's so much stereotypes about us. Even if that's not the case, right?
Yeah.
So I stayed in the US one extra week because of that. Because now I was trying to go to the embassy. Because I kind of traveled across different cities in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So the city where I first went to DC, this is where the main Nigerian embassy is. Now I'm currently in New York and I'm traveling from New York.
To DC?
I'm traveling from New York back to Kigali.
Oh, okay.
I can't, for me to do my, what they call it now, renew my passport, I have to go to DC. And you don't even want to talk about the expenses and all of that.
Yeah, sure.
So I go to there's a high commission in New York, but there is no embassy in New York. So even if you go to the high commission in New York, you have to whatever you do there, they have to send it to DC. And they won't send it to DC immediately. They have to get maybe 10 people or 20 people have to need the same service so they can just send everything at once. They can't just send one singular request.
Not like you matter that much.
I don't have 1 month to stay in New York to wait. And it's either I travel to... And by the way, I'd already spent $130 to pay in the New York... and the High Commission in New York. But somehow, I couldn't renew my listing. So then, thank God for a few connections. A friend who I was staying with, Susan Fine, who is, by the way, visiting expat at ALU, because she was the one that hosted me in New York.
Okay.
So she's like, okay, I have a friend. His name is Isaac. He's the director of RDB. I can get him to get you a letter. Mm-hmm. And then it so happened that we went to visit the ambassador of Rwanda to the US in DC when we went. So she was able to get me a letter. But all this time, I told myself, I'm not going to travel with American Airlines. Can you guys, either I'll go home directly from there to Nigeria, or you guys change the airlines. I'm not going to use American Airlines with the way they treated me. So we changed the airlines to Qatar Airways. Guess what?
What happened?
Guess what? I didn't even get to... I was like, okay, this is me trying to be calm because I'm remembering the experiences and how I felt that day.
Yeah.
I even cried because... While I was at the airport, I didn't have access to the internet. I didn't have access to a SIM card. So it's very easy for me to cry. I started crying because it was late at night. Oh. My flight was in the midnight. And then I just went to a corner to cry first. And then a kind Jamaican, who, by the way, I'm still in contact with right now, she's like, okay, I can help you out. I'm also having a similar issue. I'm going to give you my phone. You can make a call. So she gave me her phone and then I called... Susan Fine, okay, get an Uber and come back. Right. It was crazy. You're in a foreign land. So now, when I followed Qatar Airways, I was okay, let me just see something. Because the Nigerian in me can be weird.
Yeah.
So I was like, I didn't give them any of the letters. Because at this point now, I have a letter from the ambassador of
Rwanda.
And then I have a letter from the RDB guy.
The other guy
Isaac.
From RDB, yeah.
So I just left the letters in my bag and I gave my passport.
Mm-hmm.
To Qatar Airways,
mm-hmm.
and I was cleared.
You were?
I was cleared. I'm not, no caps. I was cleared.
No way.
When I came back to Rwanda, I told my friends, I'm like, if I'm traveling back to the US, maybe next year, because I do plan to go there for a couple of things. I want to go to that, just to be petty a little bit, go back and look for that lady. And like, there was no issue whatsoever. In fact, there was no reason why I should be stopped. But just because I'm carrying a Nigerian passport, or I'm even carrying like an African passport, they're going to look at you with suspicion, even though you're more credible than they are, even though you've achieved more than they are.
Yeah, sure.
Like, but then because they have the privilege at that point in time, they want to like exert some relevance over you.
Yeah, sure.
And like the most annoying thing was that she wouldn't even let me speak. And at this point, I'm getting angry. And then Ali was like, Viv, calm down.
You were with Ali?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was like, Ali's like, calm down. Like, relax.
Yeah.
Right? Because things like that can get me really like
irritated.
Irritated.
Yeah.
So, because me, I can't go anywhere and you shut me down. My introvertedness is only, it doesn't do well with oppression. Yeah. Or you trying to shut me down. I will always speak up. So this is just one of a thousand experiences.
Yeah.
Not just me, my friends who travel. One of them was just telling her story on Facebook. You travel as a young woman and they're looking at you like probably you're doing something shady or anything. They're wondering why at a young age you're traveling. It's crazy. So so we have to like consciously work towards like changing those narratives.
But now how does art help in changing those narratives, help in remaking the image of the African image and fight those kinds of negative perceptions, or the feeling that the African person has little or no privileges, even to things they rightfully deserve? How does art come in? Because people might think that's a politics type of responsibility to deal with. But now, without really admitting the fact that art can reach as far as anything else can reach. So how do art in Africa
change? Let me even start by saying that art is already doing that, right? But there's still so much to be done.
Yeah.
You can see like the rise of Afrobeats in terms of music
and
everything.
Let's go.
Like it's making people more open. Even if you check now, like almost everybody's eating Nigerian food. Everybody's I'm trying to.
Except for
today.
The part where you and Ghanaians can't agree on which country has the best jollof.
So like us and Ghanaians were like siblings. You know siblings are always we love each other. It's a kind of like love hate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I love my Ghanaian brothers.
Before we go further, we're not going there. But I'm gonna ask you one last question. I'm gonna ask the obvious question. So, which one do you think is the best? Is it the jollof from Nigeria or Ghana?
So I'll start by saying I love my Nigerian brothers and sisters. I've been to Ghana quite a couple of times. I've even dated Ghanaians, but Nigeria is king. Nigeria is king in jollof. Nigeria is king in football. Nigeria is king.
Yeah, okay.
Like, so it's not up for debate.
If you talk about football now, you'd have the grounds to stand on, given the fact that now Nigeria is qualified for AFCON. And Ghana.
But you guys beat us yesterday, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
give us our flowers.
That was luck, anyway. I think the reason you guys were able to win yesterday was because Nigeria felt they don't need the points.
Because you were better.
No, we just felt like we're already qualified. We're the top of the table.
Okay,
let's give them this.
Vivian,
it's okay. Let's go. Because if we have this argument, I'm going to win the argument. But hey,
sure,
okay. So art is already doing that, but then there's still much ground to be covered. So music is doing it, and like a lot of Africans, and I don't want to just say Nigerians, a lot of Africans are putting a lot of work.
Yeah.
And that's why people are becoming more curious about Africa coming, okay, let's try the food, let's speak the language.
Let's try pidgin.
Yeah, see? So that is what music does. I had a conversation with a friend,
mm-hmm.
and I met her in Boston, and we were having a conversation. She says, when you approach someone as a politician, they have their walls and their doubts up. When you approach someone as an education, like as an educator or let's say a professor, they are up, they are ready for a debate. Mm-hmm. But when you approach someone as an artist, their walls are down.
Yeah, like
they are relaxed. They're more prone to taking what you're saying.
Yeah, sure.
Before they even like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
So this is what this person was saying. And then when you go online this day, you say, oh, this song that was sang 10 years ago, oh my God, so this is what the song means.
Mm-hmm.
But all this while you were singing it, it becomes part of your subconscious.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm.
The way the ideas are propagated, music, art, visual arts, installation art, poetry, you see that it's one of the simplest way to push culture, to push values.
Mm-hmm.
The film industry.
Yeah.
That's why you can see someone just get up and say, I'm this, I'm that, because they watched it in a movie or because they heard it in a song or the lyric of a poem.
Mm.
So art is like, people kind of like don't even understand the extent to which art is important to our world.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so for us poets, it's even our responsibility to make poetry more accessible, more commercial.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we're diluting it, but make it easy for people to like pick up a poetry book or listen to a piece of poem on either Instagram.
Yeah,
like whichever is your part, like as a poet, just find your niche and make sure that you're intentional about your message. I don't put anything, but if I'm putting something, I know I'm very intentional about what message I'm putting out there. So art is very important. And I forgot to say that I did my poetry in the United States House of Assembly. So you can see how art. And I went there with a message.
How did that come? What happened? No, that's a big deal. We've got to talk about it.
You can see that even in that political climb, you made people cry. Like, the response to art is always emotional.
Yeah.
And that is the best way to get to people's heart. Like,
yeah,
the best way to
definitely.
Get to people is connect. Before you take a hand, like the popular quote says, you touch a heart.
Yeah, sure.
So, right, that is what the artist is good at doing.
Mm.
That is what art does. It touches the heart before it takes a hand. So, we as artists then should be intentional about propagating the kind of ideas that we want to see in the world, let's say in the next 5 years, in the next 10 years.
Yeah.
But it's a gradual process. So, yeah.
Mm, interesting. Now, I knew that poetry will get you some places, yeah? But now let's talk about the performance at the National Assembly.
Yeah.
In the US. How did that come about?
I think that's like my biggest gig, and I was so excited. Like,
wait, it was even
When I use the word gig, a gig is what we use as creatives. So that was my biggest platform. Is that my biggest platform? Okay, I would say it's my biggest platform because it's the US House of, because I've done stuff, like I did stuff to an audience of over, how many? I did Youth Connect Africa last year. 10,000 people. We had the president of Rwanda. We had presidents from Mali. We had presidents from like... So I've done stuff. So I don't know which is the biggest.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like I do stuff for royalty.
Yeah.
And that's because of... For me, before... When I start anything, I'm like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it on the biggest stages.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. So that is my own personal orientation.
Yeah.
And I keep dreaming of doing on bigger stages.
Sure.
So how did I get it? Frank Luntz got me that opportunity. Do you know Frank Luntz? Do you know Frank Luntz?
No.
Frank Luntz? You don't know Frank Luntz?
No. Okay.
Him. He's a visiting expert. The white guy that... that does the Global Masterclass series.
Oh, yeah.
So he heard my poetry when he came. I was like, oh my God, this is so good. You have to do this in the US.
Ooh.
And the guy happened to have connections.
Yeah.
So.
And then, come on, tell me how
you... So,
how the shut thing, down the stage.
The thing now about places like that, you're not allowed to video. Like, I do have photos with the Speaker of the House of Representatives.
When was that?
That was last year. I have photos with those guys.
Nancy Pelosi,
I have a video.
Then?
I even have the video
on my
Instagram.
Who was the Speaker then? Was it Nancy?
No, Kevin McCarthy.
Oh, Kevin McCarthy. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Before he was.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
So, like, you get to meet with all these, like, political leaders. Mm-hmm. Like, have conversations with them, discuss Africa with them. So, the poetry, So, my goal is not even just the poetry. Mm-hmm. The poetry is the entry.
Yeah.
And then you now get to have these conversations with these people. Get these people to come to Africa. Get them to visit.
Yeah.
Get them to, like, see Africa differently.
Yeah.
But art is the entry point.
Mm.
So they listen to you like, oh my God, this person have something to say. So yeah. we want to get to talk to you outside of, like, what you've just done,
yeah.
So, reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I had people were crying. People were like, oh my God, I haven't cried. I'm not even kidding. Like, mm-hmm.
We say you shut it down.
So, I mean, yeah. Like, I can't lie. I know, like, people try to, like, put some air of, like, humility. This is not has nothing to do with humility or not. Mm-hmm. I know I'm good at what I do, and that's because I put in the work.
Definitely.
And so if I'm going to go to an event, I know that I'm bringing value to that event. If I'm going to show up somewhere, I know I'm going to put in the work. I'm going to spend sleepless night rehearsing, perfecting. It's never going to be perfect anyways.
Yeah.
I still have the doubts, but I'm still going to go there with that mindset that because I'm here, I deserve to be here.
Yeah, sure.
And there's a value that I bring. So the response was very positive, was overwhelming. I even caught, like, I had a small clip of the speaker saying, that was an amazing poem. If I ever have the opportunity to become president, you come do
you
that
come
poem.
To my inauguration.
Yes. So I have it on camera for the future. If he ever decides to run for presidency, I don't know if he will.
Mm.
But he's a speaker. I mean, you never know in politics.
Yeah.
So if it does happen, I know that I'm going to send him the video. I'm like, remember what you said?
Yeah.
In 2023?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm ready. I was born ready. I'm ready to come do this stuff. So yeah, that was the response. But it wasn't just about the poem being beautiful. It's about the poem affecting people's hearts.
Yeah.
And someone, I did that. And then I went to, one of the things I've always wanted to do as a bucket list, as a poet, was go to the New Yorkan Poetry Cafe. This is where guys like Common and Maya Angelou, all of them, mm-hmm. have passed through this, mm-hmm. space, mm-hmm. and I'm like, it's in my bucket list. I want to do this.
Oh, you've been
and
there?
I went there.
Uh-huh.
And I shut it down. I'm like,
yes,
I shut
sir!
I shut it down. Like, literally.
Yeah.
I went late and they weren't gonna let me perform. I'm like, oh my God, you guys, I'm leaving town
like
tomorrow.
To
I'm leaving town tomorrow. Please, so, this is something I've always wanted to do. It's in my bucket list. I first saw the New Yorkan Poetry Cafe on a movie,
mm-hmm.
that I watched, like, what was in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I want to go to this place.
Mm-hmm.
And then nobody even knew that I used to do poetry. I was just still, like, coming up. And see what I was talking about, intention and, you know,
I'm
like, I want to go to this place.
Mm-hmm.
And that the chance came. And I did it. And then because I was in a hurry, because my flight was like in the midnight, and like I was rushing out, and then, mm-hmm. a woman came to me.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I had lost my mom.
Oh.
And that poem you did was just what I needed to do. She's like, can I give you a hug?
Oh, wow.
And because I'm a Christian, like, can I pray for you? Literally, like, that was one of my best memories.
Wow.
When you do art and it actually touches someone. Yeah.
I think that's how we measure effect as artists.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
So yeah.
Well, I'm so proud, man. You shut it down. Yeah, now they remember your name. Why did they not ask for extension of your visa so you can stay and give them more?
Well, I mean, going to the US is not, it's never an issue going to the US.
Yeah.
Going to the US is not even the issue. Why am I going to the US?
What do you remember the poem you recited back then?
Where?
At the New Yorker
guy. What, you are you trying to make me do a poem again? It's like I said,
I'm here with a poet.
It's called tell me about yesterday. I've done this poem before in the AOU community. Tell me about yesterday. Oh, it's the title is Leave Your Scars.
Oh, Leave Your Scars.
L-I-V-E. Oh, Your Scars.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, what are some of the lines? Come on. I'm with the poet in the house.
Is that a reason why you didn't give me any hints about what we're going to talk
yeah,
about?
Yeah,
you should have, because then I would have prepared. Because these poems, I haven't read them in a long time. But I'm going to look for it. But in the meantime, I think the first line is, tell me about yesterday. Mm. About the tired tears that free fall whenever the world's eyes cannot see. Tell me about the weight your fragile heart carries that weighs you down. About the sour taste wrapped in bitter memories that go to bed with you every night. Tell me about the time your loved one became a flower, a color in the sky, a blur, a distant memory. Tell me about the feeling in your chest down to your belly that does not have a name. Tell me about the time your innocence was taken without consent. About the scars. And now I see I'm missing my line. Tell me about your scars. The ones buried beneath the fabric of your soul. Neatly tucked away where mortal hands cannot reach. The now rigs are it. Tell me I don't understand. That the world have no clue what you've had to go through. And I'll tell you that you are a wonder. That you are nothing short of a miracle. Remember. Remember that you are mosaic, that you are art, you are earth and sky, ocean and wind, fire and ice. You are a kaleidoscope of beauty and strength. You can go through anything and come out unscathed. So these are not just scars. These are war marks carrying stories of the battles you fought and won. Telling tales of men who moved from death to life, of women who walked the path of divinity and greatness. Let these scars become healing and revival. Let it speak of a better place, a better life, of lessons learned and mistakes that will never repeat. That's how the poem goes.
I can't remember.
So like most of my poems are around 4 minutes, listen, 5 minutes long. Can't remember everything.
Listen.
Well, yeah.
If you had recited that.
Yeah.
5 months ago.
Yeah.
And I was in prison. I was present. At that moment, I would have been done the same as the lady or a guy. I don't remember if it was a guy or a lady who asked you for a hug.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for me, if you offered me a prayer, I'd be like,
that's a conversation for another day.
Yeah. But that was beautiful.
Yeah.
That was.
So. Wow. I did that, and then I did the women poem too. The one I did.
Yeah, the one you like to do. Yeah.
I love that.
Oh,
one.
You love that.
It's wherever I find ladies, I like just remind you who you are. That
do you want to tell the ladies what
you're not measured
Let's
by.
Go. Let's
you're
go.
Not measured by societal standards. Uh-huh. You know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So what is in the poem? That's what I want to hear. That's what I want to hear.
See all this.
We want to talk to the ladies.
Are you paying for? Do you know like? To get me to perform, you have to pay.
I mean, I'm with a poem. I'm not gonna talk to you as a politician.
It's okay. Yes. So, this poem is dedicated to every woman. Mm-hmm. Originally wrote it for Mother's Day, and then I wrote it originally at the request of a friend for Mother's Day, and I just changed the word mother to woman. For International Day of Girl Child or International Women's Day, something like that.
International Women's Day. Probably.
So, but yeah, like the poem is it fits at wherever there are women.
Yeah, sure.
So yeah,
either women of all identities.
Yes. No. Please, let's not have that conversation. My values are very Christian. Like I know where I stand regarding women. A woman is a woman. A man is a man. There are only two sexes. But hey, let's not go there. Let's not have that conversation.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
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 But you know my stance.
Yeah,
my stance
is
this is it.
Yeah. I mean, maybe you can share two or three lines in the poem.
Okay, it's hard to share. Okay, woman, do you remember the first day you stepped feet on earth? And how you suddenly light up man's world? That day mankind began, because what is man without his kind? What is man without his ribs? Awestruck, man could not keep his calm. Woman, you were bone of his bones, God's first refined product, polished and packaged to perfection, delicate and designed for care. So who have been selling you these lies about yourself? Who have you allowed to dim your light? Why have you suddenly forgotten who you are, daughter of Eve? The hands that crafted you do not shake. So you never have to wonder about your worth. You're worth far more than the finest of rubies. Woman, you are dynamite. if you ever wander far away from home, ever find yourself second guessing yourself, just remember to count all the ways that you are beautiful. You are a budding rose in the light of water spring in desert lands. You are a rare gift. So when the world tells you that you're kind, don't play with the stars, that a crossbow across your back won't wield to your charms, that a spanner won't sit well in your palms, that a spacesuit don't suit you, that your angles are not isosceles enough, and that you're not fit to lead the nations, then remind them of Deborah, of Harriet, of Iwela and Kamala, of Goldman and Malala, of the figures they try to hide, Catherine, Dorothy, Mary. Remind them of me. Remind them of you. Remind them of your mother who carries the wind in her fist and gathers her children at her feet. She is the back that held them, the hands that fed them, the breast that nurtured them, the knees bent in prayer for them. Woman, from your loins, nations have come forth. You have single-handedly raised men who defied gravity and conquered the skies. So breathe. I'm gonna stop there for this poem. As always, my poems are like 5 minutes long, so let's just stop there. Breathe.
You just make me want to make this podcast about poetry. I'm gonna be receiving poets. They come, we shut this down.
I know.
Ace. I never get tired of that poem though. I think this is the third time I've heard you performing it. The first time was at the pre-therapy event.
Yeah.
The second was at the school we went to.
Yeah, gosh.
And now. And it never gets old. It never gets old. That means performed by the best anyway.
Oh, boy. I think you're helping me, but yeah. I'll take it.
So now, Vivian. So one of the sessions we have here, yeah, the fact that we also talk about mental health.
Yeah.
And I like the idea that when you started poetry, yeah, I mean, before you knew it was poetry that you were doing, yeah, you were writing your personal stuffs in your diary, never knowing that one day it could be the poetry that gets you to the U.S. National Assembly or whichever places you've traveled to.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the impact of art on changing the narratives, African narratives, towards mental health.
Where do I start?
Mm-hmm.
So, before changing the narrative, arts has changed my life. Poetry primarily has changed my life. Of course, other forms of art, music and the rest, but like the one that has affected me the most is poetry, because that is one of the ways in which I process my feelings and everything. And that's why I know I talked about where my focus is on right now, about the human experience. In fact, I have a book coming up soon called For the Ones Who Ride Alone, and most of the poems in that collection is just about the personal struggles and, you know, mental health issues. Mental health is very important, because like I was clinically diagnosed of depression sometime, I can't mention the time.
Sorry, but
yeah, and I started therapy, although I couldn't go through with it because of like the stigma that comes with therapy and all of that. And even before I finally decided I was going to see a therapist, it was a lot of like, oh, should I not, and then battling with my values as a Christian.
Yeah,
like,
sure,
there were so many things involved.
Yeah.
But like, mental health is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that has actually helped me go through all of that is poetry. So yes, poetry is very important. And then there's a way that art kind of like romanticizes suffering. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
That's quite a line.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it does. It romanticizes life. It makes you look at the world from a different perspective.
Yeah.
You know how you can just take an ordinary thing, like, you know, you're looking at a tree and you're like, oh my God, this tree, see how the tree dances, see how it moves to the rhythm of like the air or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're just taking something that's mundane, something that's ordinary, and then you're giving it life, you're giving it meaning, you're making it beautiful.
Yeah.
That is what art does. It makes life beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It makes your heart full. So yes, it's a very like amazing tool that can be used. It makes it also, it takes away that stereotype, that stigma.
Mm.
So when you bring people together, there's so many things I'm restraining myself from saying, because I don't know where this is going to be found. But like, when you bring people together in a creative space,
come on, you can be free.
it's some of the projects I'm currently working on. like the space I told you about.
Yeah, sure.
Like, you bring people together in a creative environment, right? It kind of like demystifies like that air of, okay, oh, I either I'm depressed or I'm going through a struggle. When people begin to talk about it in a creative environment, it no longer becomes a struggle.
Yeah.
It becomes a creative process. It becomes something beautiful. It becomes something that everybody wants to like put in their feelings, their emotions. Mm-hmm. So you come out of that session or out of that space a new person, a healed or someone that's on the road to healing. So yeah, it's a huge tool. It's a powerful tool that can be used in fact any space at all. Think about any space, and mental health is one of those spaces where we need to be intentional about like using the art to like push.
Wow. And I think especially when it comes to an African perspective, with the stigma, as you mentioned, with the culturally infused perceptions, most of them wrong, I think it would be a great deal to use art to talk about it. And I mean, it's only rare that most African artists come out about having mental health struggles.
Yeah.
For example, if you mention that you've been through depression,
yeah,
trust me, there's someone out there who thinks, okay, if she can talk about it, I don't see why I shouldn't talk about it.
Yeah,
you know. So I think that's a great tool to.
Now I'm talking about it, but it took a long time before I was able to like fully be able to embrace the fact. Okay, I've gone through this, and you should be able to like, you know, tell people about it.
Yeah.
Because then you're helping other people to be able to open up.
Sure. All right, Vivian. Man, I have to have you some other time. Like, you have to come often. I know soon you might start your podcast.
I already started my podcast. Oh, you already started. I'm going to start like visual production sometime in December. Maybe I would have.
What is it called?
My podcast. Tell them. My podcast is called Letters from Africa.
Letters from Africa. Yeah. What are you gonna talk about?
Africa. It's a podcast about Africa. I mean, but like, just kind of like infusing, like, I mean, I'm a creative, so definitely there's just gonna be like that creative perspective.
So it's gonna be everywhere.
It's already everywhere. Have like 9 episodes
recorded.
Out, but they're audio episodes.
Yeah,
it's on Spotify, it's on Apple Podcasts, it's on Podchaser, it's on Amazon Music,
everywhere.
It's everywhere. Everywhere, but everywhere.
I
haven't done a lot of publicity because, like, I want to do visual production for and then have like people guests and all. Because the 9 episodes are all solo episodes, and they're just talking about like digitalization in Africa, and those were the topics that were given to us from the Ministry of ICT.
I was gonna ask, are you doing software engineering?
No,
you're doing entrepreneurial leadership. I'm like, hey,
no, because I was part of the Ministry of ICT's program. Like, okay, you guys talk about digital transformation in Africa, but then because I love to talk about Africa, I can kind of like talk about it from an African perspective. But now that I'm going to venture out on my own, I'm going to begin production, like taking a deep dive into like African cities, African culture, like just talk about like I will talk about country Africa that nobody talks about,
like,
you know, Comoros. Have you ever heard about Comoros? Do you know Comoros is a country in Africa?
I know it's
have
a
you
country,
heard but... about like Principe and Tobago, like what's the name of it? Principe and Sao Tome, and these countries nobody hears about them that much, you know.
Yeah, and most of them are beautiful. I've never heard something about Namibia.
Yeah.
I watched a vlog about it. I was like,
Have you met people from those countries ever?
Not really. Early.
Yeah,
that's crazy though.
If we need to, like, even if we have the budget, even travel to some of those places and do like documentaries. So that's the part.
Yeah, sure. So find Vivian everywhere.
Find me.
So please stream her podcast, find her on her social media. And thank you, such active, that active on social media.
Sorry, I'm not very active, but I will try.
Just know that.
But I'm on Instagram. You can check me out on Instagram.
Vivian, no?
It's Ofre Vivian.
Ofre Vivian.
Yeah.
Why Ofre?
Ofre is my surname.
Oh.
O-F-R-E. That's my surname.
What does it mean?
Very cool. I mean.
you flexing about it a lot. So what does it mean?
So there's so many variations. You can say king. You can say the firstborn child.
Are you the firstborn?
So, no, that's my surname. My surname. That's my father's. The name that was given.
Yeah.
My own name is Vivian Ama. Mm-hmm. My middle name is Ama, and my first name is Vivian. But my father's name is Ofre.
All right. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you. Everyone, please keep streaming the Inbox podcast.
Yes.
Find Vivian. Give her some more gigs. This woman, she can shut down everything you set her to. So thank you so much. See you next time. Bless
up. Thank you.